So this period of time, this period, or any questions, and with regard to the time for questions. Thank you, I've heard that before. So, just getting the reminder that it's ice cream. Black chocolate, apparently. In this time, sometimes through the days, as well as before arriving, can be a whole variety of themes, areas of interest, exploration, questions, concerns, which you may have. And the intention is to invite anyone who has anything that you would like to ask with the questions. If they are difficult questions, then those go specifically to Elijah and Sandra. And if there are easy ones, then the foreigner gets it. And that would give us all peace of mind. Sometimes in the asking of questions, please do not expect, especially from myself, what I say to bear any relationship to what you ask. And if it does happen that you ask a question and my answer does meet the question, please regard it as a remarkable cosmic coincidence, which very rarely happens. Alright. So, in the exploration of things, of course, some of the themes that we have been engaged in here, the meditations, the instructions, the ethics, the range and variety of experiences, the joyful and the painful. Also, questions can arise around circumstances, daily life issues, and relationship to the world that we live in, some of the institutions, and much, much else. So, Dharma teachings and practices genuinely are an endeavor to explore the wide range of areas of what it is to be a human, what it is to be on this earth, and the communications together can, and hopefully will, contribute to that. You may have questions which more specifically for one of us, or invite all three of us to respond. We'll leave that to you. Given the relatively short period of time here, if the questions could be rather to the point, that will help as well. Covered it? No? Okay. So anyone who has any... yes, sir, any questions? Yes. Yeah, if you don't mind from there. If your good voice can... maybe we need them.
You say that Bhagavan experienced very strong sensations, extraordinary sensations in the
body. Yeah. And then said something after that.
Half of the body disappeared.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm. Yeah. And the question is? Do you what?
Hear me.
All right. All right.
So I'm just shocked and astonished from this experience. And I don't know if it's normal. And what is the meaning of it?
Yeah. All right. So,
can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So, if I got the question right here, that during the day and during the meditation, what you experience is strong energies in different parts of the body. Anything else?
I feel really close to myself, and then I kind of like inside a big cave, like whole part of myself is feeling.
Yes. So, and then there's the experiences as well as parts of one self disappearing, other strong energy areas taking place. So, should we respond to that? Yeah, all right, okay. In the process of the meditation with the forms, there is the perception there with the methods and the techniques, and this, as you point out, does have for some quite a strong impact on the energies of the body. That strong impact will begin to move things around quite a lot, and it can happen and does happen and regularly with people that some of those energies get concentrated in particular locations in the body. There may be other areas which one cannot feel nor have contact with. It's like they've gone dead or removed from. And it can, the feeling level genuinely can be quite uncomfortable with that. Strong energies here, nothing there, feeling of being in a cave and much, much else. If it's not flowing easily and fluidly in the formal postures, sitting, walking, standing, etc., then it genuinely can be helpful not to add other postures. That could be yoga. It could be just simple bending and stretching. It could be dancing. It could be jogging. So that will help the energies to free up, move more freely, so there isn't this imbalance that you refer to of strong energies in one area and nothing somewhere else. So that the sense of the being from head through to toes genuinely has the sense of a flow to it. Helpful?
On the contrary, I would like you to experience it.
I like the experience to repeat and to
be stronger.
And be stronger.
Enjoy it
while it lasts. Right. So I think Sandy is more or less whispering, enjoy it while it lasts. Good. Any other responses? Right.
Maybe just to say.
Please.
Maybe just to say that there's the wish you say, I'd like to feel more of them. And there is the feeling sometimes that when this happens, when the energy is running really strong in the body and sort of these kind of strange things happen, there's the feeling that, oh, something now is happening, you know, something special is happening, and I want more of it. And the invitation is just to kind of, just to really regard it as another experience. Simply. Coming and going.
A very, very small point. The body is sometimes a representation of other areas of our life. It kind of informs us. And in that informing of us, it may be a small indication and encouragement to explore the relationships one has to presence and absence. Yeah, so we're going to another question? Yes, sir.
I was
reading one of the sheets in Dreyfus.
He was reading one of the sheets, one of the pieces of paper in the dining hall.
Regarding the meditation on the feelings.
Meditation on the feelings, yes.
And I read a sentence saying, feelings give support to activity, neither detach yourself from them nor indulge in them.
And sounds like something I would write. Go on.
And, I read that sentence and I was like, yeah, it's a big task to do, especially because I feel like we're growing a little bit numb, and because we're overwhelmed with so much suffering that we're exposed to today. And it's really hard to take action without having something burn inside. And I feel like it requires a lot of balance to do something like that, and especially to persuade and get other people to follow you, to start something bigger. So I was wondering if you might have a tip on how to do that, how to start something like
that. With the three of us, the question is more directed towards me at the moment. Okay, is the question more directed to myself at the moment?
Christopher, it's your kind of question.
Feeling life in a variety of ways is very significant. Why are you waving? Oh, of course, right, okay. So, a line or two has been taken from the meditation of feelings sheet that's on the table in the dining hall. And in that I express mindfulness neither to be so identified or detached, I can't remember the exact words, from the feeling life. And as it was pointed out, with so much suffering in the world, how very easily we can get rather numbed to all the suffering. And what was being pointed out is the necessity to find some passion and conviction so that people can come together, work together out of their concern. And it genuinely is a deeply important question, and as the questioner said, one of the constant widespread problems is with so many painful stories coming in from our own life and from the world around, sometimes on a daily basis, there is a kind of contraction and there is some kind of numbness that goes on. And then the heart life has the danger, in a way, of becoming rather dried up. And one of the signals for that is we just can't hear any more painful things. We kind of withdraw into a shell. And that means that others, the powerful others, will have far too much influence. In terms of the response to it, what was said, I think the word was tip, I'd have to put it in plural here, tips, there. That the key, I think, and many times in life, it is the unpleasant feeling which has been one of the first triggers for any meaningful personal, social, political, global change. One feels something unsatisfactory, unhealthy, and it needs change. And that becomes the bonding from the unsatisfactory, the bonding which helps to bring people together. But feeling is not separate from the language. So the willingness, as we've been doing here, to listen to each other, to share experience, to talk about the pain, or experience helps to break through the numbness. It's not easy. It may open up even more areas of pain, but when people begin to share, it genuinely goes a long way to reducing it, and possibly some clear insights can come out of it. If we do feel we are becoming numbed with pain through all the painful avenues of information, then it is a matter of urgency that we reduce the amount that is coming into us. One, we get in the tips now, we get in touch more and begin to feel more closely there. We use our practices to keep steady, and we have the contact with the like-minded people. We reduce that. So, for example, and very regularly, and I mentioned it to one person today, sometimes I'll switch on the news in the evening, television news, or listen to the radio, and there is a painful information is coming out. Listening to so many painful stories, you know, through the Dharma and other times as well, I just say, I do not need to listen to any more. And then just switch it off. So to give the heart some protection. And the big protection is from numbness. So we have to look ways and means that we keep the heart alive and don't become numb. Thank you. Yes, please. Sorry.
It's a very similar question. I'm sure I'm not the only one here who will go home and tell my loved ones how inspired I was and hope that they would want to look into this.
Yes.
Obviously, it needs to come from them, and as you said, they need to feel the need for change in their life. And when the student is ready, the teacher shows up. And they could put it off a year or 10 or maybe not in this lifetime. So, first question is, any tips for us for inspiring our loved ones, other than maybe them seeing the impact that it's had on us? But specifically, you mentioned, you know, our own life experiences. I'm blessed to be in a wonderful profession. I teach courses in mindfulness-based childbirth and parenting, which I think can really have a very strong impact on the next generation and society. One of the prerequisites is they know they need to commit to practicing every day, 30 to 40 minutes a day, every day for 8 weeks. Now, I'm not the Dharma police, and you know, I tell them that they do what they can, and they'll soon figure out that this is helpful in their life. But it's to get them to come, and they don't have next year or 10 years. Because it's a finite period.
I'll there pass over to Sandy.
And as you said last night, you know, quoting your grandson, these couples are giving birth to mindfulness teachers.
Yes, yes.
Children live in the present, and parents, you know, would be wise if they're attentive to it.
Yeah.
So how do I inspire them?
You give us some lead.
Well, basically, I'll recap. Okay. Actually, I'm going to speak in Hebrew. איך אנחנו הולכים הביתה אם כשאנחנו אולי יש לנו אנשים קרובים, משפחה, חברים, תלמידים, שאנחנו היו נורא רוצים שהם יבואו גם. איך אנחנו משפיעים, משכנעים, או עוזרים להם לראות. כן? שלום. אוקיי.
וההמשך של הקהילה הספציפית
פעם, שמעתי סיפור אמיתי על מישהי שהייתה, נדמה לי, אג'ן צ'ה הייתה במזרח, וגילה מאוד מאוד בעדיפות, ואז כשהיא עמדה לנסוע הביתה, היא שאלה את הנזיר, את אג'ן צ'ה, שאלה מאוד דומה, איך אני לוקחת את זה, תרשמים? יש תרגום, there's a translation from Hebrew to English. אז אג'ן צ'ה אמר לה, כשנוסעת הביתה, אל תהיי בודיסטית, תהיי בודה. ומה הכוונה בזה? בעצם בדיוק מה שאת אמרת, שאנחנו יכולים, בהוויה שלנו, בבודים שלנו, בשוני שאנחנו, שאנשים אחרים יראו שהשתננו, שזה יהיה שזה מה שהם, לא אנחנו, הם יבואו אלינו ויגידו, וואו, חזרת עם פנים קורנות, מה זה, מה עשית, מה הכסף, מה הסוד, כמה זה עלה? והמקום הזה לראות, אני ככה מוסיפה, זה כבר לא עתיק, אלא זה בינינו לבין עצמנו, לראות את ההבדל העדין אולי, לפעמים, בין הרצון לעזור, הרצון המיטיב, האמיתי, האותנטי, ה-self-less, להיטיב, להועיל, לתרום, להפחית את הסבל, לבין שזה הופך להיות הצורך שלי, my mind. וכי הרצון להיטיב כשהוא ולא הסבל, הוא באמת יש סבל, אנחנו רוצים להקל עליו, ואותו רצון אותנטי ונקי נקרא לו במחות, כשמתרגש על הרסף, לאנזונית, מניעה לאנזונית, ככה זה המילים של פיסטרן, זה הופך להיות, it's about me, it's not about, לא about אחר, about me, אני מורה טובה או לא לפי עם אחרים. תארו לכם שקריסטופר היה מחליט על עצמו אם הוא מורה טוב או לא, לפי כמה מאיתנו היו מתרגלים בבנות. עכשיו מישהו היה. לראות את ההבדל בין שני הדברים האלה, בין אני לבין הרצון. כן, אם מצבר בי או מצבר את הסדה. ולבטוח שכל אחד יש לו כל אחד וכל אחת יש להם את הדרך שלהם. ואנחנו רק יכולים להציע, להראות, אבל לא ללחוץ. ככל שנלחץ יותר, הם תתרחו. אנחנו גם לא אוהבים שלטות שרוצים עלינו. אז להציע עם יד פתוחה, כמו יד ששמים, שרוצים שפרפרי תשב לנו על היד.
Years ago, I spent 10 years in the East, and most of those years as a Buddhist monk in Thailand and India. And then after 10 years and 10 days, as I remember, I got off the plane at Gatwick Airport, and I didn't want my parents meeting me at the airport because there would be bucket loads of tears, and there's already enough rain in England anyway. And it was a Sunday morning, and there's a walked up the road at 11 o'clock on a rather bright Sunday morning, and a guy was in the front garden gardening, and he said to me, I had my backpack on, just walking up after 10 years away, and he said, "Been on holiday?" And I said, "Yes, for 10 years." He said, "What?" When I arrived home, my father, actually my stepfather, brought up the first few years of my life by a single mum. He, not once, and we had a good friendship, you know, plenty of love there, never once asked me a single question about the 10 years I was in the East. And it might be like that for you or for others, that when we go home, this world can seem so strange and odd and weird that he or she or they, our loved ones, may not ask us anything. And as Ajahn Chah said, go home as a Buddha. Whatever you do, don't go home as a missionary. So sometimes, rather than trying to convince, our own being, with friendship and warmth and love, that's where the powerhouse is. And that may genuinely trigger some interest and some questions. And that's the best communication that we can give to the loved ones. Yes, anyone, please. Yes.
What's comfortable for you?
Yeah, what's easy for you? Because I can translate.
מאוד ניסיתי במהלך השנים להביא אהבה, שמתי לב שאת האהבה שלי אני מצליחה יותר לפתח עבור האנשים שאיתם אני עובדת או משהו, וקשה לי מאוד להתמודד עם מישהו שקצת נשמע לי מתנגד, והמון כעס עולה בינה. רציתי לדעת איך אפשר כן לפעול וקצת
להפחית את הכעס, או איך להתמודד עם אנשים שממש משנים את הדעה שלהם.
Sometimes, if I can give a summary, and do add that we are in contact with people, and in the climate of the people that we are with, there may well be a lot of tension, loud voices, conflict, unresolved issues are going on, and it makes it a very different environment to be in. Some of that easily can rub on us, so then we are angry, as you pointed out, about that, and that feeds directly into the general whirlpool of the anger. But oneself is as much as part of the problem as that which the anger is about. And it's an uncomfortable and distressing situation to be in. The solitary voice has to find some other kinds of avenues of communication. sometimes that may require some skills and practices to learn. What immediately would come to mind, Marshall Rosenberg's NDC programs and many, many other kinds. So there may be some actual practical steps that one can learn some skills in communication. The second is to develop a contact and friendship with some of those on a more personal and friendly basis, so that that friendship, the kindness, the gifts, the cup of coffee, socializing, may help the voice of the other to soften. And therefore, there's a genuine reaching out which is taking place. Any raising of the voice from the other is the blocking out of other voices. That's the intention with the raising. Which means that for the one who listens, has two responsibilities among the many. If the voice is loud, one is quiet, the voice. If the voice is speedy, one is much more slow and measured. If the voice is going on for a long time, one's voice is in rather short, clear and precise sentences. If there are people where the voices are so loud and bullying, and other people are afraid and are timid and cannot speak, then the one with the mindfulness and awareness needs to turn to those who are quiet and give an invitation. Is there anything that you would like to say? Anything that you would like to contribute? If in an in a meeting where there is anger which is taking place there, and the loud voices are happening in whatever way, can there be some agreement from the very beginning that the act of respect, which is the quiet voice, will be expressed in the meeting? So that there is some prior agreement. In the tradition, that means the tradition of the monks, if at the end of meetings when people are exploring to come to a decision, the 2,500 year agreement is there, that once the group has come to a decision, one does not speak anything afterwards to undermine the decision. And anyone who did not come to the group doesn't have the authority to speak about a decision that the group has made. The only time a person outside of the group can question the decision of the group if there is something which is specifically unethical about the decision, that it will bring about harm. So it needs one person to work sensitively with others, to make friends where there is hostility, to invite the quiet or more timid people to speak, and to see if there's some arrangement can be made, an understanding, before anything is spoken. And if one starts to quietly implement that through the direct personal contact, the culture might change.
Yes.
So The activists, because I'm moving these circles as well, of course, quite often language of anger is used, justifiable anger, righteous anger. It's rather important to know inside of oneself the difference in the quality of the feeling between protest, struggle, non-violent of course, struggle, indignation, the critique, whatever that may be.
Indignation is lois komemut.
And to keep that voice.
Indignation is komemut. Komemut.
To keep that voice inside of us alive, but nevertheless, it easily goes to anger. And when it goes to anger, the intentionality is to heap blame on the other, whoever the others may be. And that heaping of the blame through the verbal attacks, usually, will bring about the exact opposite of what one wants. It will bring about, from the other, contraction. To give an example of what I mean, I had a meeting with the leader of the House of Lords, as they call it. It's our unelected, undemocratic chamber, which is still partly running the country because the English have always preferred the past to the present. And it was she, I forget the good lady's name, but anyway, nothing so important. And she said to me, some of the most difficult people to communicate with are peace activists. Because they come for a meeting with us, but they have so much anger, even though what they are trying to do is to stop the wars and to get the parliament and the upper chamber to but their anger puts the members of parliament and in the upper chamber on the defensive. It just is not healthy and it just doesn't work. So we've got to keep checking in with ourselves about that. I don't go on about this, but I will. For a moment, forgive me. 10 or 15 years ago, I had an idea there, and I had some meetings in the parliament, to set up a minister for peace in the government. And because we have, probably the same here, the minister for defence, the minister for arms, we have the generals giving advice to the prime minister and to the finance minister about going to war or not going to war, and I said, we need a counter-argument, we need a minister for peace who can then offer, in the cabinet, a completely different view. So I wrote a long, detailed analysis and proposal of what the responsibilities would be for the minister of peace. I got some MPs behind it for me, and nothing happened. But one still keeps digging away, etc. That's what we do.
Another question.
Yes, sir.
There is this cosmic infinite energy, cosmic infinite intelligence. Some people call it God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about the religious God or the Nibirtan, Hashem, the personalizing we do.
Personification.
Yeah. Personalizing we do to the figure there in the sky. It's like once you said in this retreat, gives punishes or rewards. Talking about this infinite energy.
Mm-hmm.
How does intelligence, how does Buddha or Buddhism, or you, any one of you, relate to this?
So this is one of the harder questions.
Oh no!
Cut you it out.
That's very easy.
Her years of exposure to the wonderful Sufi tradition. She's Miss Rumi.
Can I just quote from instead of answering the question? Yeah, just to feel, I feel, I was thinking that I haven't
I think the last time I was up here with you was when I was on inquiry.
Right.
10 years ago. Give me a moment. So, the Sufis, and actually he wrote this to me in a note today, the Sufis, they call this what you call infinite intelligence, or whatever we might choose to call it, they call it the Beloved. And the way I experience it is they're really pointing towards a very, very intimate contact, a relationship, a connection with something, which in Buddhism doesn't really have a name, or it has many names, the unchangeable or the immeasurable, or I don't know, Christopher knows all of them, I think. But in Sufism, it's really referred to this something. It's really referred to, I think this is so beautiful, it's referred to in such an intimate, loving manner, the Beloved, you know. And it's this Beloved that we kind of immerse ourselves in, or that we just come into contact with, or connection with, when this movement of selfing, as it's been mentioned here, this movement of selfing, this kind of this movement of I that becomes kind of solid and that has opinions and views and wants things and feels itself as separate from the world and separate from other people, when this kind of becomes dissolved, or when it just kind of loosens and relaxes, and then we just kind of sort of drop into or find ourselves in very intimate connection with life. With life, just with life that has no labels and has no titles and has no, you know, it's just vibrating, throbbing life. This is the Beloved. And so it's really just kind of relaxing very, very deeply into kind of relaxing, letting go of everything that's kind of just sticking to us, you know, all our patterns, all our habits, all our views, all our, just kind of this movement process of selfing, just kind of letting it kind of relax and allowing ourselves to just relax into something much deeper, the Beloved. So, I don't know if that any
kind of answer. That's the answer that came.
תינוק שנולד אין לו ידיעה של נפרדות. הוא לא יודע שהוא שונה מה שד של אמא שלו. נפרדות זה
separation. Oh, sorry. Okay. A baby that's born doesn't know what sentence means.
So, נפרדות זה חוויה נרכשת, נלמדת.
Separation is
כשאנחנו צלו דרך המדיטציה, התרגול, התבלות, נותנים לתחושת הנפרדות, נותנים, לא נכון אני נותנים, תחושת הנפרדות נושרת, זאת אומרת שספר אמר לפני כמה, זה לא oneness, זה יש שוני. יש שוני, אבל אין נפרדות.
there is difference in those inspirations.
אז אפשר לקרוא לזה בכל מיני שמות, איזה מסורות שונות, יש שמות שונים, מסורת של היוגה והמסורת הסופית, מסורת של הילידים האמריקנים. וגם במסורת הבודיסטית, יש לזה הרבה שמות, אם אין לי זוכר, אמר פעם שהוא ספר בטקסט הקדום, באמת, הסגנון הרפאלי, הגיע ל-108 שמות. Deathless, Measure, Emptiness. אני לא יודעת אם המילה אהבה מופיעה באחד מה-108, אבל... זה. וגם המילה אהבה זה רק מילה. כמובן שכל מילה תתאר את הדבר הזה, חוטט לאמת. קוראים לזה בשם איזה שקר. אבל האסנס, האסנס פה הוא באסנס, שם. מבינים על מה אנחנו מדברים.
Just for a moment or two, just to reflect a couple of the very important points that we just said in another way, and if I may say, about 25 years ago in Bodh Gaya, the place of the Buddha's awakening in Bihar, the poorest state of India, started with the help of a couple of friends, a small school. I didn't want the school to be a Buddhist school. I felt that it could lead to problems in the community in future years. And in the spirit that Sandhya was just referring to of interconnectedness, that in order to support and develop the school, it needed to be interreligious. And therefore to be a school which may very welcome Hindu children, Muslim children, Sikhs, Christians, secular, and anyone of any faith or background, and the teachers needed to reflect that diversity as well, to make a contribution to appreciation of the interconnectedness of things. There are, in religion, and in spiritual beliefs and views, a wide variety of the ways of looking at ultimate matter, shall we say. And so some will feel, and appropriately so, very comfortable with a more personal theistic language. Others will feel more comfortable in that language that you referred to of cosmic intelligence. Others will use the language such as in the Buddhist world of truth or reality or nirvana. It may be, possibly, that some of those experiences, beliefs and views may be in sharp contrast to each other. There. So, the one who has a more theistic view and the one who makes no reference to a theistic view, in their view may be quite different. I'm really, over the years, not so concerned with the view that one has. Whether it's a religious view, a Buddhist view, a spiritual view, or a scientific view. They are all ways that human beings work and sometimes struggle to make some sense or explanation of things. And to me, what is far more important than the view which is expressed is what is the influence of that on one's life? Is the influence of that genuinely contributing to love, to service, to care for others, to freedom from intolerance and the dogmatic, narrow-minded way of life? Is it enhancing the heart? Is it such that it's freeing up the whole being? And so in my life, and possibly in yours as well, sometimes we meet people, let's say, of religious faith. We may not be able to connect with their God. We may not believe in their view that they will go to heaven after they die or go to hell. We may meet somebody else of a religious faith who says, karma is very important to me. I live for a rebirth, a better rebirth, or whatever. And we may not be able to connect with that, and the multiple other views. But what we do see, and what we notice, and what we feel through contact with her or him or them, that sometimes such people live very beautiful lives. They live with respect. They live sensitively. They're very dedicated to life and to the welfare of life. And we can find such people in the theistic community, in the scientific community, in the spiritual community. And to me, that's more important than just trying to be correct with the view. Answer the question? Yes, I just said because I, yes.
Europe and Israel and about refugees and about Palestinians and all in the same conversation.
Yeah.
And it seems like fundamental difference in what's happening in Israel, that people here, other than being ignorant of the situation, they feel unsafe.
Yes.
And there's a lot of background, a lot of opinions, it doesn't matter, but I think the background of feeling unsafe is fundamentally different than feeling ignorant of a situation. And how do you find compassion, or how do you find a way to solution when you feel insecurity in your home?
I appreciate the point there, but the person is making reference that in one of the previous talks expressed my concern about the refugee situation and what was being pointed out just now is the person says there was or is a fundamental difference between Israel and elsewhere.
Like, I don't mean there's a fundamental. I mean that there is one situation when, for example, in England, you don't want people to refugees to come in because you have opinions about it. But in Israel, people experience war and experience personal anxiety, like refugees, and either us or them.
Can I just? It is a common view, which is expressed here. I, of course, with the years of the visit, do appreciate that. But there is also a common view which is not quite fair, nor actually accurate. As a person coming from the British Isles, do want to remind that it was a 30-year war taking place in Britain. More than 3,000 citizens died right through to the end of the 1990s. There was continual bomb attacks by the IRA in mainland Britain, in Scotland, and of course in the Northern Ireland, there was numerous warnings and signals to get out of buildings, but it was an insecure situation. I'd also just like to remind as well that on the 7th of July, some eight years ago, there was a suicide bomb attack in London. There have been other various threats and killings of servicemen and other actions. So I wouldn't put Britain in such a category, as well as the hundreds of men and a number of women who have returned from the wars in the last 10 years since 9/11 and before that. And that has caused a great deal of stress, obviously, within the country. And so it's not, the image that may not be actually reflecting in terms of the death toll of British citizens, both home and abroad, that it's not as peaceful nor as comfortable as the picture that sometimes that one has. Having said that, I think your point is really important, of course. And wherever it may be, whether elsewhere or here, there is a lot of fear around, there is a lot of insecurity around, and unfortunately the politicians far too often play on it. And that kind of information that goes out increases the level of anxiety for people. And that can make us angry, as we were listening to. Angry about the situation, angry about others, angry about Arabs, Palestinians, right wing, left wing. The anger can go in all sorts of directions. It really is a task for all of us, I feel, to work sincerely on our inner life, to see if we can rise above all of this fear, aggression and insecurity there, and just find some other ways for dialogue, communication and especially conflict resolution. It's a tremendous task. It's a tremendous task, whatever country we live in.
אני רוצה להוסיף שלפעמים הפחד שהוא מבוסס כמובן על אירועים אמיתיים שקרו, ולפעמים הוא לא לגמרי בקורלציה ישירה למספר האירועים לצורת החיים היחסית יותר בטוחה שאנחנו חיים כאן מאשר הפחד צובע לנו. ורק אחר כדוגמה אני אגיד שאבא שלי, שבהרבה בהשראתו אני ככה מה שנקרא כטייטל, מעורבת באקטיביזם פוליטי, הוא היה ניצול שואה, מה שנקרא כבדים. והוא אמר שהוא לא מוכן שבשמו ובשם מה שקרה לו ולמשפחתו ולכל שאר היהודים, we inflict pain on others, יגרמו לסבל בכאב על אחרים. הוא אמר, לא בשמי, לא בשמי, לא בגלל מה שקרה לי. והוא לא היה איזה בודה, הוא סטנר את הגרמנים, הוא לא היה מוכן לברוח על מדינת אירופה. אבל הוא לא היה מוכן, הוא אמר, מדינת ישראל היא המדינה הכי חזקה במזרח התיכון. אנחנו סוחבים איתנו טראומה לאומית של עם כביכול חלש, פגיע, נתון לאיומים כל הזמן כביכול. אבל אנחנו שוכחים שאנחנו מדינה הכי חזקה במזרח התיכון. אנחנו יכולים להתחיל להרגיש קצת יותר בטוח. או לפחות, אני לוקח את הדברים שלי בחזרה. אולי לא יכולים, אבל לפחות יכולים לבדור עם הלב ועם רמת הפחד והסטרס בהקשר הזה, ההישרדותי שאנחנו חיים פה, האם הוא באמת מבוסס מציאות? כמה? או בוא נגיד לא מהם אומרים, כמה? כמה הוא מבוסס מציאות וכמה הוא מבוסס גם על יחדים וגם על מה שהתקשורת, הפוליטיקאים, כל מי שיש לו אינטרסים להגביר אותנו את הפחד הזה. כמו שכסף אמר, זה עבודה פנימית שלנו, לבדוק מה מזה אמיתי, פעם איזה עיתון אני קורא, איזה חדשות אני שומעת, איזה פרשנויות אני נחשפת, ולבדוק כמה מזה מתכתב עם המציאות.
יש.
The question comes up.
Yes.
Is it shall you tell how deal then Kilesh Kobayashi practical projection
between
experience
and
Kobayashi לרוב שקורה באנושי, כמו שקורה
כמו
להרגיש שמה שקורה פנים ומה שקורה בחוץ יש את הקשר
הזה. אז תחזרי עוד פעם על החלק האחרון, כמו שקריסטופר אמר.
בשיחה עונה שמאל של אחד האנשים על שמה שקורה בפנים, שאני מחובר למה שקורה פנים, אז אני מתקשר למה שקורה בחוץ.
So the question is, how do I differentiate, how do I know the difference between a genuine, authentic feeling and a projection? Is that more or less? Good question. Good one.
I think maybe possibly I got a plan probably.
I think we want to always know.
אני חושבת שהתרומה של התרגול היא שאנחנו כל הזמנים יותר ויותר קלים, יותר ויותר בבהירות בתוכנו. וככל שהבהירות הולכת וגדולה, אז נהיה יותר קל לראות. אני חושבת שבדרמה יש איזשהו ביוט, ותן אותי, או לפחות בחוגים מסוימים יש לי ביוט, כל זה פרוג'קשן. והאמת היא שזה לא כך משנה מה הביאו, כמו משנה יותר בעיניי, מה מועיל. כן, זה, אני חוזר שם בבהירות. הבהירות, אוקיי, אני אדבר על חוויה אישית שלי. בין אם זה סיטואציה של אחד על אחד, בבית, בין אם זה סיטואציה עוזר, קבילה, קבוצה, מדינה. שאני, באופן חווייתי, שיש הרבה בהירות, שיש הרבה צביעות, אז מה שעולה באופן טבעי וספונטני זה אמפתיה, זה קונקשן, זה משהו שאין בו פחד, זה משהו שיכול לראות את האחר באופן אמפתי. וזה המצפן שלי, כי אני יודעת שבפעמים שחוויתי יותר צביעות, נגיד בסוף רטריט, אמרו מישהו אמרה בקבוצה, ככל שהימים עוברים האנשים נראים לי יותר נחמדים ויותר יפים ויותר חמודים, ואם אנחנו אומרים לעצמנו, זה מה שחוויתי בסוף רטריט, שהיה הרבה צביעות, הייתה הרבה בהירות, והעננים של הפחדים והרגילים והשיפוטים קצת הוסטו הצידה, אז אולי אני יכולה שזה יהיה המצפן שלי, זה יהיה המגדלור שלי, כי זאת הייתה חוויה אמיתית, זאת הייתה חוויה, זה לא היה קונספט. והחוויה הזאת, גם אם ברגעים, בזמנים אחרים לא זמינה לי, הזיכרון הזה זמין לי את המצפן. אני יודעת כבר איך זה מרגיש באופן חווייתי שיש כזה קונקשן, שיש כזאת צבילות וכזה חיבור. ועד אני גם יכולה יותר ויותר לדעת שזה לא.
Great. There are three very common kinds of projection. One is around desire and wanting. So in Dharma, a projection is to add something to something which is not actually there. It's to inflate, exaggerate. And that can be either to build up or to put down. So that can occur with that which we want. That's one kind of projection which is very common. The second kind of projection which is very common is around the self. I can build up my self-importance, that's to exaggerate it. I can put myself down, that is also. It is to project into what is not actually there. The third also is with regard to views. So there can be projection of views, which is the building of them up for all sorts of motivations and purposes, of putting them down, or views which are unwise and unskillful because of the harm that they cause, and therefore it's a confirmation of projection which is going into the views. So if we really look in ourselves to see, are there projections going into what I want? Are there projections going into the self, I and my? Are there projections and into the views there? If we get that right, not only will it bring more clarity, but it will bring a harmony between the feeling life and the self, so to speak, and the views and those wishes which we have.
נהיה לי ברור. תודה רבה שאני מדברת. כל פעם שאני חש שעולה לי באמונה, על ידי פחד או כעס או גריד או וונטינג, פרוג'קשן זה מורה בזה.
So if we just take one more question as the time flows by. Yes, sir.
As a father to be soon, I wonder if you have any, I'm sure you have, anything to say, or the most important thing you have to say about reading Dharma, meditation, and parenthood. I'm sure there's an infinite number of things to say, maybe the first thing or the most important thing.
Sorry, I'm glad this question can't go to me.
We cannot answer it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Christopher.
He's the only parent here.
Firstly, the only difference between the mother and the father is that the mother's got the tits and you haven't. And it's rather important to remember. Because with the good birth of the baby, the huge amount, day and night, of course, which the good father can offer. You might find and see this as a father, as with my daughter who has now four kids, and many other mothers that I've spoken to, the deeply loving, mothering, protective role that the mother brings to the little one will probably mean for a period of time that much of her love will by necessity be directed to the little one. All 24/7 around the clock. Very caring and protective, and so it should be. So the love which for the period of time before the birth would mostly have moved backwards and forwards between yourself and the good partner is in a way going three ways, but it's not going three ways. It's going two ways between the mother and the little one, and you're a kind of fringe figure on the side. And one has to be rather loving and connected and patient there until the rhythms begin to flow well between all three. In terms of the other parts of the question, I think the sense with kids of the combination of love and adventure there. And if it's first time parenting, approaching, so the initial periods, as most of us found, it's kind of when it tries to get used to this to in a completely new way of life. It really is. And just say goodbye to sleep for a year or two. Other things. But the other things I won't mention, but you know, from one man to another. But all of that's part of the love and the generosity and the care there. And as the little one grows and the communications grow, it gets more fun and more enjoyable. I would suggest as much as possible for the little one, right from a very early age, to spend plenty of time outdoors. And in parks, if you live in the city, but lots and lots of time outdoors. I think children, babies as well, when they're out outdoors, it's more stimulating, it's more, they grow, they sleep better, and it's good exercise. So it works very, very well for the family. And the other is, as the little one grows, and the years go by, please don't try to convert the little one to any kind of meditation. My daughter is 34. Her one-liner is, and always has been, "Dad, you do your thing, I'll do mine. If we agree to that, we'll get on well." She doesn't want her father to be a missionary for her. And that kind of understanding there, and only a few weeks ago, before she gave birth to the last one, she rang me up. We speak on the phone usually, most days of the week at home, but she rang me up at 8:30. She says, "Dad, I've got some really good news for you." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" She said, "Dad, for the first time in my life, I'm meditating." And I went, "Exactly, wow, oh my God, you're the last one I expected." She said, "I'm sitting on the train going to work, and I found my mind with so much thinking about all the things I've got to do today." She said, "So I just straightened my back on the underground train and started mindfully breathing in and breathing out." And she said, "Dad, it works!" Hallelujah! That only took 34 years. Okay, enough. Oh, yeah, yes, yeah, exactly. So, in terms of the name, isn't it? Oh, yeah, yes. So, a couple of things. We have a patchwork family, I may have mentioned. So it's four kids, three fathers, and the first name of the last one, actually it's originally it's Hebrew, and Caribbean is Josiah. And the little boy's second name is Kahil, the like Gibran. So first it's a Hebrew Arab name which the little one has got, and the one of the most loveliest statements about children is of course this from Kahil Gibran, where he speaks about our children, not our own, etc. And it might be worthwhile just seeing it from the Prophet, the book, and typing it up and printing it out. It's a very beautiful statement about our relationship to children. Mm. It's full of love and of wisdom. Mm. Those small things there, and just have fun. kids are fun. Nice. All right. Thank you very much for lending it in. Let's just have a quiet minute together. Sorry. Thank you. May all beings live mindful lives. May all beings live with love. May all beings engage in endless inquiry. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.